Welcome to Nevada Newsmakers. On the broadcast today, two professors of political science, one from UNR and one from CSN, Eric Herzig and Mark Poplawski, for the whole show on an all-new Nevada Newsmakers.
After the elimination of solar net metering in 2015, more than 2,000 workers were forced to find solar installation jobs in other states. Now, we have a chance to help put Nevadans back to work. Assembly Bill 405 would send a signal that Nevada is open for business. Don't let the clock run out on solar jobs. Visit yeson405.com. Paid for by the Alliance for Solar Choice.
Sully Sports Bar inside the Tamarack Junction is South Reno's headquarters for locals to watch all your favorite sports. And now you can enjoy your favorite team on our brand new high-def TVs featuring the Papa, the big daddy of them all. It's our giant 17-foot big screen TV wall. And we have two 79-inch high-def TVs, 12 65-inch high-def TVs, including two party booths for your own private party, and six high-def private booth TVs. Bring in your own headphones and listen to your favorite game right from your own seat. First, make your bets in our William Hill Sportsbook, then enjoy your favorite cold beer, libations, burgers, wings, pizza, and our signature Build Your Own Bloody Mary bar. Then settle in and download our app and listen to any game being shown in Sully's Sports Bar. Catch your favorite team on our new high-def big-screen TVs. Sully's Sports Bar is the only place to watch your favorite sports all year long. The Tamarack Junction, just north of the Summit Mall in South Virginia.
It's Tamarack Junction, your junction for fun.
St. Ives Florist, for every holiday and every special occasion. For romance. Custom home design. We have the largest selection of fresh flowers in northern Nevada. And we also offer a large selection of unique gift items. Come see me, Lori Ann, at St. Ives Florist, 700 South Wells Avenue, or call me at 333-9190.
Nevada Newsmakers coverage of the 2017 legislative session is brought to you by Pro Group Management, the Nevada Trucking Association, the Nevada Franchised Auto Dealers Association, and the Retail Association of Nevada.
This is Nevada Newsmakers with host Sam Shan, a no-holds-barred political forum. Now, from the Nevada Newsmakers broadcast headquarters, here is Sam Shand.
And back on Nevada Newsmakers, we have a great program lined up for you today. We have two professors, Eric Herzig, who is professor of political science at UNR, and Mark Poplawski, who is professor of political science at CSN down in Southern Nevada. Pleasure to have you both on the program. I wanted to start with you, Mark, and ask you, you know, what do you think of the partisanship so far at this latest legislative session?
In Carson City?
Yes, sir.
Well, I think that there's been a lot of undercurrent. In other words, bickering going on that's occurred because of, one thing, the way Farley has deserted the Republican caucus and gone independent and been caucusing with Democrats. That's caused quite a bit of resentment, and the Democrats, having taken control, they're manifesting that. They intend to maintain that control in the legislature and continue to push it, and they're pushing back on what they feel the Republicans stole 2 years ago.
Eric?
It's as bad as I've ever seen. I thought 2015 was bad when the Republicans, also with two House control and a distinct agenda, Michael Roberson kind of bullied his way through, particularly the first part of the session. And things kind of settled down because everything got caught up in the governor's tax bills. But this session started from day one. Aaron Ford giving a very partisan kind of welcome speech, the bottling up of bills. You've seen bottling up of bills by individual legislators, but this was, or at least it appears, to be far more systematic in terms of the caucus just saying, we're not going to do that. And Republicans are frustrated. Roberson is the one crying foul the loudest. So payback is something there. But yeah, it's very evident. It reflects what we see nationally, and that hasn't been the case in Nevada.
Mark, it seems like it's really a national agenda that the Democrats are following.
It's true. I think that the Democrats are trying to continue to push the same agenda that will strengthen their base coming into the next cycle, because Democrats nationwide are worried about trying to get more seats back in Congress. So seeing as how the Democrats here in Nevada were able to take the legislature back in a very unique, against the tide kind of thing in the last cycle, they want to try and maximize that and follow the lead of the national agenda for, in terms of resonating with their base, which they think will continue to carry for the next 2 years.
Eric, do you think that a lot of this is the result of term limits and the fact that everybody is running for something else?
That is a part of it. And we've seen that now for multiple sections. I mean, you can go back to Horsford, and it was clear he was running for a higher office the way he kind of ran the Senate that second go around. And yeah, people are looking for other offices. They're not as experienced. So Jason Frierson, for example, he's now the speaker, but he sat out a term too, which I think in a sense hurt his experience. I don't want to get in, you can say whether he's doing a good job or a bad job. I think that's more kind of from partisan perspective, but it's like he is relatively inexperienced in this role, and then he's not going to be in that role very long. And that's a problem we're seeing, and we've seen now for several sessions.
Well, one of the things that he has going for him is his mentor, which is Barbara Buckley. So he certainly has somebody to refer back to in terms of advice. I wanted to talk about what happened with Adam Laxalt and A.G. Burnett, Mark. How did this strike you? And at this point, from the news reports, it looks as though an independent gaming commission council from separate from the AG's office is not going to happen, because the governor's come out and said he's not in favor of it.
Well, I believe that this, again, is one of those things where leaks to the media and painting a picture the way you want it to be is indicative of the way the political agenda has gone nationwide in the last 2 years. Say whatever you want. Paint a conversation however you want, and then let somebody else disprove it. I think that it would be foolish, based on this one alleged conversation, to change the structure that's worked so well in regulating gaming for the last 50 years, and I think the governor's correct in that regard.
Eric?
I would disagree. I did comment on the story, easily a couple months ago, and I was amazed how the media didn't pick it up. I mean, this was, now, obviously it's not going to get picked up by the Vegas paper, but this was at best unseemly in terms of the interference from the attorney general. And, he rushed. Burnett's going out of town. Oh, we have to have this meeting. And he's asking basically for something that benefits one gaming entity. And he's in charge, ultimately, the attorney general. The cornerstone of Nevada's kind of reputation for just purity and gaming control, it's hard to put those words all together, has been based on the independence and the arm's length transaction with those whom you are regulating. I think Laxalt crossed that line, and it does raise an issue that maybe you want it even more independent.
Well, I think one of the reasons why this, I'll let you back in a second, Mark. I think one of the reasons why people didn't jump on this story was, from the very beginning, it was revealed that the FBI said that there was no crime that took place. So potentially, yes, it was unseemly, but a lot of people were looking at this as a partisan attack on Adam Laxalt and didn't want to pick up the flag and run with it.
I get that. And that's Laxalt's strongest defense. But you're sitting there, so why did you take this forward? Why did you rush this? It's like, and his explanations on it, well, his first explanation was, I was serving a client. That's nice, but do all clients get the same treatment? It was one that I don't think he violated the law. I'm not saying that, but in terms of that, in a sense, holier than thou, is what the gaming commission needs to be. They need that it's got to be more than just a veneer. It's got to be a real independence in terms of the regulatory structure.
Okay, Mark, you're up.
Well, I agree with a lot of what Eric said. However, I think that the legislature is also looking at the possibility of, like, an inspector general's office to review all the state's activities. Because we have the heads of all these departments who are elected, they're not answerable to anybody but the voters. And our voters are not the most intelligent, intellectual creatures on the face of the earth. While, you know, respect to those who do it intelligently, there are a lot who just vote rote or partisanly. And I think we need some form of control. But we have established a gaming branch in the Attorney General's office that's unparalleled. And obviously, if Mr. Laxalt crossed the line, there needs to be somebody who can call him on the carpet and not the entire office and remove it from the process.
Well, I think the governor made that very clear. And obviously, the governor's experience as both former Attorney General and former head of the Gaming Commission had tremendous experience in this. And I think A.G. Burnett came out of this with flying colors on pretty much every level. In terms of a caution and then, you know, upholding the gold standard. Let's take a break. More with our two professors when we come back.
Hi, my name's Marilyn Miner, and I'm sure you'd agree that Nevada's a very special place to live. I was born here, and my husband and I have raised our family here. I feel it's a privilege to live and work in the Truckee Meadows. I especially enjoy helping my clients reach their real estate goals. Sometimes the smallest details provide the greatest satisfaction. I'd be complimented to talk to you about your next move.
Call Marilyn Miner at Dixon Realty, 742-1280, or log on to marilynminer.com.
The signs and symptoms of cataracts can start out small with subtle changes in your vision. So don't wait. Be proactive and take your vision into your own hands. If you're experiencing the onset of cataracts or just have questions, contact your eye care professional or call Eye Care Associates of Nevada today. Dr. Hiss has years of experience specializing in the surgical correction of eye disorders and has completed over 84,000 vision-correcting procedures. At Eye Care Associates of Nevada, we'll change the way you look at the world.
This is Nevada Newsmakers.
And back on Nevada Newsmakers, we continue our conversation with two terrific professors of political science, Eric Herzig of UNR and Mark Poplawski of the College of Southern Nevada. Mark, let me start with you on this. The state Senate passed the insulin price bill that's very tough on drug makers, according to the headlines from the Associated Press. It seems like Senator Cancela has tremendous support at the legislature, but at the same time, the pharmaceutical industry is fighting back like crazy because they know that if this passes in Nevada, it's going to affect them across the country. What are your thoughts?
Well, I think that they're trying to stop the slippery slope. I don't know that passing just in Nevada will be enough. I think that they may file a lawsuit and stall it in the courts for years, and the state will have to fight it. But obviously, pharmaceuticals are going to fight this, just like cigarette companies fought tooth and nail on every lawsuit against them, because once you get one precedent, it takes you down. And pharmaceuticals have got a lot to lose.
Eric?
I think you both have summed it up very well. And the only thing I would add is going after this price and going after the pharmaceuticals, classic populist politics. I mean, it's really hard to argue given the optics of the pricing and the price increases and the big pharma versus somebody who needs the insulin.
Let's change topics to ESAs. You know, is this the governor's hill to die for? As some others have said in this program in the last couple of weeks, that he's really not that committed. Mark?
I'm sorry. Say that again. I missed that.
The ESAs. What's going to end up happening with the ESAs? Because it appears, even from his State of the State speech to his comments more recently, that the governor appears to want ESAs, but how badly does he want ESAs?
I think that ESAs are going to... I wish that the Supreme Court would hand down the decision in the Missouri case, because that's a start in the direction to see where the law is going to go. I think that the court has started to bend back towards allowing a little bit more flexibility for government when the benefit of the child is involved. I think that as long as you can argue the child benefit theory, the ESAs can survive. But I'm not sure the Democrats want to fund it, because they see it as a rich man's tool, not the poor person's tool, because even though the ESA will give them a little bit of money, it won't be enough for their children to go.
Well, the partisan line's pretty clear. I mean, the Democrats are not going to... Democrats are going to want a lot in return to go even to the level that Sandoval has proposed for the ESAs. back to your initial question, I don't know how committed Sandoval is. I think if you listen to his State of the State address, one former legislator commented, a Republican former legislator, it was a Christmas tree approach where he gave every kind of group something, and the ESA was a sop to particularly the most conservative wing. How far the conservatives can push this, does it get caught up in other deals? I could easily see that happening to where Democrats swallow hard and say, we'll vote for it, but we're getting this out of it. This is an ugly kind of bargaining chip policy, I think.
Well, I think the irony was that with the additional money that the Economic Forum came up with, the governor said it's going towards education, but didn't say it's going to go towards funding ESAs.
No, absolutely. And that, I think, indicates where he's at with it. You can get even into the personal politics. I mean, ESA is the hill that Dan Schwartz wants to die for, and Dan Schwartz is not the most popular guy down in the Capitol building. And so, you know, that gets tied up into it. This is one that I don't think is going to get resolved until the very end of the session.
Mark, you get the last word on this.
Well, I think that Dan Schwartz, if he really wanted to take this through, should have done it with silk gloves and quiet talk. But he came in pounding and thundering, and everything he says is supposed to be gospel. And now that the Democrats have control, they have no reason to bend to his thoughts on what it should be. Schwartz should have worked with the governor and put together a comprehensive message.
And that, in a perfect world, would have been the appropriate thing, but I don't think those two would have more than a 30-second discussion as they did the other day. Let's take a break. More with our professors when we come back.
Nearly 200,000 Nevadans work in retail businesses, supporting families and the community. Nevada's retail businesses generated over $2 billion in sales tax revenue in 1 year, including nearly $700 million to help our schools. Shop around and see all that Nevada's retailers offer our state.
We're the Retail Association of Nevada, representing thousands of Nevada businesses.
Businesses that work for Nevada.
Your business workers' comp company should be your partner. The Pro Group customer care team brings you effective risk management training, support, and web tools at no extra cost to you. We maximize the safety of your employees and business every day. Pro Group is with you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, with information and resources at your fingertips. We ensure your employees' safety and that your premium's in line. When you're a Pro Group member, you have the team that's looking out for you. Pro Group Management, workers' comp that works for you. Call for a no-obligation quote today.
Nevada Newsmakers coverage of the 2017 legislative session is brought to you by Pro Group Management, the Nevada Trucking Association, the Nevada Franchised Auto Dealers Association, and the Retail Association of Nevada.
And now, back to Nevada Newsmakers with Sam Shad.
And back on Nevada Newsmakers, we continue our conversation with our two professors of political science, Mark Poplawski of the College of Southern Nevada and Eric Herzig of UNR. I wanted to go to D.C. for this last segment here and talk about the different approaches to their new office between Catherine Cortez Masto and Jackie Rosen. It seems that Catherine Cortez Masto is acting, and I'm not blaming her, but as though she's been there for 20 years. The first thing she did was start a PAC when she got to D.C., and she has been on the attack, or she has been fundraising for other Democrats around the country. Do you think that this is the appropriate way to lay the groundwork, Mark?
Well, I believe that she felt it necessary to step in and assume the mantle of party leadership that Harry Reid has laid aside. Not only did Harry serve as the majority leader and minority leader, he served as the godfather of the Democratic Party in Nevada, and there's a huge void there. She had to step in and take control, otherwise there would be a lot of infighting, and she's assumed that in a very diplomatic way, but shown that she's willing to be powerful and tough when necessary.
I would agree that there is this void in the Democratic Party at the top, and she's trying to fill it. I mean... Nobody's going to fill it the way Harry did, and that's not as critical as it may sound. In terms of the fundraising, I don't know that that's unique to what she's doing. I mean, that seems to be the the page where it never stops. I mean, every day I'm getting emails from, you know, whether it's Save Turn Montana Blue or from Jackie Rosen or from, you know, or from Republicans. It's like everybody starts raising money. It's like they have their election night party, and then I think 2 days later they're raising money.
You know, and it's also been interesting that Catherine Cortez Masto has only really done two major interviews. One was with the Reno Gazette Journal, which was kind of a disaster. And the second one was she appeared on Eye on Washington, which is a terrific show, but I'm not sure it has a very large audience. Mark, your thoughts on that? And Democrats in general not wanting to appear on interview programs.
Well, I think part of it is because in some media, there is a certain gotcha mentality where they want to try to find something and attack policies as if this person were the creator of the policy, instead of realizing that battlefields are gained in inches and feet, not by miles at a time. And so I think they're trying to avoid the gotcha-ness because, quite frankly, nobody can push President Trump off the front of the paper right now. And so it's best to pick the time when you make your statement so it's most advantageous to you and what you're proposing.
Well, in part, Masto never has been very comfortable with the media. It hasn't really been that comfortable if you watch her in campaign settings, which is, I've always struck with politicians, that's where you have to work, and they don't do it. In terms of avoiding things, I find there's a certain irony there. I would agree there's this gotcha mentality, and we don't want to go on the media. But this is coming from, say, the left, even though it's supposedly the media is the left. I just think it's a lot of, in Masto's case, it's certainly more personality.
And, you know, and I have to point out that Governor Sandoval is not exactly forthcoming in terms of long-term interviews. I think the last time he was on this program, and he did two shows when he did it, was a couple of years ago. I also want to say, Mark, that, you know, it seems to me that Dina Titus is really, you know, carrying the mantle of leader of the Democratic Party in Nevada. And by her press releases over the last couple of weeks, they have been pretty astonishing in how outraged she is by some of the things that are coming out of the new budget.
Well, I think that she has the ability to do that because she's in a safe seat. She's safe in her district. She's probably not going to run for statewide office again. I'm not saying that was a given, but it doesn't look like she has the momentum or the desire to do that. And so she can attack these things like the junkyard guard dog. And I think that Catherine Masto is trying to slowly build her momentum, her base, use the attributes she has to build up strength with the national party to assist not only her and the state party in the coming cycle, as we talked about before.
Now, Dina, on this program, in the last two interviews she's done, has talked quite frankly about the fact that she's seriously looking at running against Dean Heller. Do you think that that's not likely?
I wouldn't rule it out. The longer she waits, one, I think the less likely it becomes, although ironically that also hurts the Democrats as well. Because if she jumps in, many other Democrats certainly who are maybe looking, they're not going to jump in and run against her. She has multiple flaws. We've seen them statewide.
See Ruben Kiwan.
Yeah. And it's like the Democrats are really candidate short, particularly for a statewide race. And Dina could be a statewide candidate, but boy, her last run was just disastrous.
But I mean, if you took another look at it, do you remember the Chick Heck race in Nevada for U.S. Senate?
Yeah.
You know, Chick never said a word during the campaign. I met him after he had been elected, and I was stunned to meet the man who was behind this giant campaign that was so well run. But he never spoke, and I think that if Dina were to run a campaign like that, that she would have, with the Democratic registration, a fairly decent shot.
Sam, this might be snarky, but Dina Titus is not going to say a word. I don't think that. I'll take the over on that.
And I'll say this. Yeah, Dina's got a heck of a lot of baggage in the closet that's already of record. Chick Heck didn't. He had done a couple terms in the state legislature, nothing else. Nobody knew anything about his policies, and they could run the campaign while the Democrats impaled themselves on the Santini-Cannon primary. They hated each other by the time they were done, the Democrats, so that nobody wanted to vote for anybody. and, heck, walked into the void because he had good handlers. But Dina's got a lot of baggage.
And that's where we have to leave it. Guys, thank you very much. Terrific show. Really appreciate you both taking the time, and we'll be right back.
After the elimination of solar net metering in 2015, more than 2,000 workers were forced to find solar installation jobs in other states. Now, we have a chance to help put Nevadans back to work. Assembly Bill 405 would send a signal that Nevada is open for business. Don't let the clock run out on solar jobs. Visit yeson405.com. Paid for by the Alliance for Solar Choice.
Early in the morning or throughout the night, professional truck drivers are on the job, serving you, safely moving freight that's crucial to our economy. From the oldest industries to our newest innovators, from the exotic to the everyday, trucks are everywhere, moving everything. Never afraid to embrace a future that makes Nevada and our nation stronger. Trucking moves America forward.
How do you shed some light on a better economy? Start with growth inspired by Valley Electric Association. We're a member-owned power company that puts Nevada first, and we're doing big things, like providing prosperity by securing renewable energy projects. For Nevada, that means more jobs and more opportunities, all for a strong statewide economy. In other words, together, we're doing powerful things. Visit us at vea.coop to learn more.
On our next broadcast, State Senator Scott Hammond will join us. We'll see you then.